Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and former CIA agent Bob Baer is back with us to talk about the horrible suicide bombing that killed seven CIA employees in Afghanistan on December 30th. That bomber was a 32-year-old Jordanian doctor who the CIA apparently thought was going to become an informant for them. Over the weekend, a Pakistani television station showed video of the bomber before the attack sitting with the leader of the Pakistani Taliban. Bob Baer is author of the book See No Evil, about his 20 years with the CIA. He was a subject of the movie Syriana, in which he was portrayed by George Clooney. You remember that? And he's a Time.com columnist. Bob, thanks for coming on again. Welcome back to WNYC.
It's great to be back.
First, what do you see as the significance of the bomber appearing in this video with the head of the Pakistani Taliban?
Well, I see a couple things, and one of them is that we have taken on a new war here when we killed his relative, Beydullah Massoud. This is simply an act of revenge. Beydullah Massoud was a Pakistani Taliban leader, but as far as I know, he has no American blood on his hands. And I think we did this as a favor to Pakistan, to the Pakistani government. So as we keep upping the number of our enemies, we can expect more and more of these revenge attacks.
So that killing that you just referred to was a relative of the Pakistani Taliban leader or of the bombers?
Of the Pakistani Taliban leader.
Yeah, because I think it surprised people that this guy, who is Jordanian, bombing Americans in Afghanistan, was seen with the leader of the Pakistani Taliban. Like, this reveals some linkages that may not have been realized before.
I think there's always been linkages. The jihad is really, in their minds, is a war of Islam against the West, against colonization. And it doesn't really matter who you ally as long as it's with a fellow believer, the faithful. So it could be Indonesian, Jordanian. It just doesn't matter. And the fact that the Jordanians took him out of the tribal areas in Pakistan, you can be sure he had good connections with the Taliban, even to go up there, and that they vetted him as well completely. They probably read his website. As you know, he was on the web advocating jihad as well. So he was a known quantity to the Taliban, who does spend a lot of time on the Internet.
Does this incident have larger implications for the war in Afghanistan?
Oh, I think it does. I'm very pessimistic about the war in Afghanistan. I just don't see how we can win. We've lost six soldiers today. We've got the Pashtun ethnic, it's a plurality in Afghanistan, has turned against NATO and against the United States. It's allied with the Taliban in Pakistan. I mean, they're ethnically the same people. That border is impossible to police. And as you know, nobody has offered an exit from this war. Nobody in command.
And as we see from the Christmas Day incident, Al-Qaeda can just franchise. If there's too much heat on the border area between Pakistan and Afghanistan, then they're going to get people to go to a place where there's, you know, a less guarded failed state like Yemen or Somalia, or take your pick,
yeah,
practically.
Well, think of all the blanks on the map they can hide out. You know, you mentioned the countries. I mean, you know, you can even operate on Nigeria. Parts of Nigeria are not under the government in Lagos. They can go anywhere. They can move. They're extremely mobile, unlike any guerrilla force we've faced in history. They can move around the world.
So just to pursue that for another minute, with the Al-Qaeda stronghold in Yemen now and maybe others elsewhere, do you think the U.S. is squandering too many resources in Afghanistan? Is such a big war there becoming actually an impediment to fighting a diffuse Al-Qaeda that can pop up in lots of weak states?
Well, except for this Jordanian, I don't even think Al-Qaeda is in Afghanistan. So precisely who are we fighting? We are fighting potential fellow travelers, allies, believers in Afghanistan. Again, that's never been defined by the military or the White House. And yes, they can move anywhere they want. And remember, Yemen is even more difficult to fight in than Afghanistan. even the Prophet Muhammad wasn't able to subdue Yemen.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, so we, you know, where does this war stop? And I think what we're seeing is that Al Qaeda, if there is a strategy, and we certainly can't articulate it completely, intends to bankrupt us.
Former CIA agent Bob Baer, my guest on WNYC. We can take phone calls for him at 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or post to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Was this incident a botch by the CIA in Afghanistan? They seem to let their guard down with this guy by trusting him to come onto their base when they thought he was going to become an informant.
I would go beyond that. And this is a very tough statement, but the seventh floor of the CIA, I think, is complicitous in their deaths in the sense that these people were not people who had worked in the field before. I mean, it's like taking a rookie cop who's never been on the street and sent him into the worst neighborhood with no feel for the street, no training. The chief of base was what was called a reports officer. She was an editor, essentially, didn't speak the language, had never worked in a hostile environment, didn't speak Arabic or Pashtun, and they sent her out to run this place, and she called the shots. You know, a city metropolitan police force would never do this, send a rookie out to run a place like this. So why does the CIA?
Why did they? Does it indicate they don't have that deep a bench right now?
It's not a question of deep a bench. The CIA should be disbanded.
Disbanded. I mean,
started over again.
You worked for this agency for 20 years. I think you'd say you and your colleagues accomplished a lot during that time. What would it mean to disband the CIA? We still need intelligence, right?
Oh, absolutely. We need an independent intelligence agency, but we need to get to the point where we are. You know, look, it's been 9 years since 9/11. Are you telling me in those 9 years we couldn't train link people who spoke the language, which is an absolute requirement in the old CIA? You had to speak the language. You had to have gone through a mentoring program. You had to go through a two-year course of training. It was a professional service, which was changing when I left the CIA. Somewhere along the line, there are people will point at certain directors, deprofessionalized it, and that anybody could be a spook. You know, bad CIA reputation aside, it is a profession, and if it's done well, it serves the country if it's not politicized. But the fact that nobody in that base spoke Dari or Pashtun or Arabic, secondly, they were using mercenaries to protect them, Blackwater, what's left to protect to the CIA?
And a Blackwater employee was one of those killed.
Oh, tragically, and they were heroes in a sense because they're out on the front lines, but they were put in positions that they were sacrificed.
So without speaking the language, well, he was Jordanian, so he probably didn't speak Pashtun anyway. But this is such a thin, treacherous line when you're looking for informants who actually can infiltrate the enemy. How does the CIA vet potential informants in a war zone like Afghanistan? They obviously thought they had vetted him well enough, and they obviously didn't.
Well, I mean, the mistake here, not all the facts are out, by the way, so I may be corrected on this.
Mm-hmm.
The mistake was that if you bring somebody behind the wire, you run them through a metal detector and a scanner instead of driving them into a base. Secondly, you never meet by committee. CIA meetings are always one-on-one. Psychologically, it's very important for the informant. He thinks he's beating, you know, his identity is being protected if it's just one person that would know it. And that's what you tell these people. But having 13 people at a meeting is just not the way things are done. So what they should have done was send a trusted Afghan out, or anybody, to pick the guy up. You drive him to the gate. You run him through a metal detector, a scanner. Pat him down if you have to, one employee, so that you're only losing one person. And this has been done. I've done it when I'm in the Middle East. You run them through embassy security, through one entrance and out the back if you think you're going to get blown up. The fact that he was driven through was a fundamental mistake.
Former CIA agent Bob Baer and Shahid in Forest Hills. You're on WNYC. Shahid, thanks a lot for calling.
Ryan, thank you. thank you for taking my call. Just a quick comment. We should learn from our own mistakes, rather blunders. I mean, it was the United States and its allies back in the 80s. We trained these people fighting against us now in Afghanistan, weren't just born overnight. We actually brought them in that part of the world from different Islamic countries. We trained them. We gave them weapons.
To fight the Soviets at the time.
I trained the Yemenis in the 80s how to make explosives. Yes, that's true. But remember, don't forget, we were fighting the Cold War. It was an existential war, and we needed all the allies we could get. And during those days, we effectively allied with the Muslim Brotherhood. This was a conscious policy. One White House after another, we allied with the Muslim Brotherhood to fight the Soviets in Afghanistan. We knew who these people were, and let's not forget that Osama bin Laden was ultimately a Muslim brother. I mean, that's his origins. He took it to the extreme. So, yes, strategically, it was a mistake. But if you put it in the context of the Cold War, it's understandable.
So was the mistake training Yemenis to be comfortable with explosives during the Cold War or training the Mujahideen in Afghanistan when the Soviets were, meeting their Waterloo there? Or was the mistake after the Cold War in failures to follow up in certain ways?
It was failures to follow up. After the Cold War, we all talked about the peace dividend and how were we going to, war was over, we were going to enjoy a very long peace, and we took the Middle East and we just ignored it. We kicked the can down the road, let all these problems fester, refused to deal with Iran, refused to deal with the Palestinian question, one thing after another. And the Middle East is, when things fester, they always tend to get worse.
Charles in Manhattan.
Yeah.
You're on WNYC. Hi, Charles.
Hi, Brian. Nice to be called again. I wanted to say to Mr. Bear that I was the Naval Advisory Group in Vietnam, 1970-71. And when I left, I had so much consideration for the CIA that I said I would never let them order my breakfast. And nothing has changed. They run around the country doing these strange things where nobody can speak the language and trying to assassinate this person, that person.
Well, that was a long time ago, 40 years ago practically now. And I don't know, 1970, 71, has nothing changed in the CIA since then? Maybe that'll get your CIA hackles up a little bit, Bob.
Well, I think it's gotten worse, but absolutely, because you had the CIA drawn into Vietnam. The CIA is a civilian organization that does best when it's not in the middle of a war. A lot of these people in the CIA, people used to run it, are of the OSS days, Ivy League, English majors, poets, things like that, and to draw them into a war, and you give them some sort of battlefield responsibility, well, you can end up in a catastrophe. But again, that was a political decision made by the White House, first by the Kennedy White House and then by the Johnson White House. So you saw the worst side of the CIA in Vietnam, and now what we're doing, we never learned anything from that, so we take them and put them in two other wars, Iraq and Afghanistan, where they shouldn't be. I mean, why is the CIA firing missiles at targets in a tribal area? That should be a military decision, not a civilian one.
This bomber was a doctor. The Christmas Day bomber was an engineer trained at an elite London college. Why are these educated people with everything to live for willing to blow themselves up to fight the United States?
It's a mentality difficult to understand. I've done a couple films on suicide bombers and talked to them. I've even had one case where there was a woman with two children that blew herself up, and it was over a completely bizarre circumstances where the husband and the woman's lover decided that in order to recover the family's honor that she would blow herself up in Israel, and she did. There is no profile. It's a virus that runs through parts of the world. It sort of spent itself in Israel now. It wasn't thanks to counterterrorism completely. The Palestinians went through it. A lot of this last Palestinian in Afghanistan didn't, Balawi. But it's something that you really can't profile against. You can be educated, you can be illiterate, it doesn't matter. What my concern is, if this virus spreads in Afghanistan, it's going to put a wedge between us and any chances of running an effective counterinsurgency.
JC in Queens, you're on WNYC. Hello, JC.
Yeah, I just have a question. My observation would be, are we looking at a strategy of that worked apparently successfully against the Soviet Union in Afghanistan of I would call it exsanguination here by the Muslim Brotherhood, now Taliban, now gone worldwide.
What's that word? Exsanguination?
Bloodletting. Exsanguination.
Yeah, I like it. It's whether, yes, this is exactly what they're doing. I mean, and it wasn't so much the Soviet Union was defeated in Afghanistan, it was just drained dry. I mean, they didn't lose Kabul. They left Kabul because of a political decision. And they pulled back into Uzbekistan, and this is what they're after. All they have to do is control the country at night. All they have to do is wear down the American people, and we leave. There's not a chance in the world we're going to be exfiltrated, you know, taking our army out by helicopter out of Afghanistan. You know, we have to redefine the war on terror, what terror is, where these people are, what they want, and you have to start by controlling your own borders, and you have to start by letting the FBI and the CIA share data, which they don't until today, and the National Security Agency.
Even today, I mean, about the Christmas Day incident, people say a failure to share intelligence about a dangerous man was again a problem like it was before 9/11, but in a very different way, right?
It wasn't, well, not so much. I mean, you know, this guy should have been on at least a list for a secondary search. I mean, you don't have to deny entry to everybody into this country.
I mean, what I heard was there was a turf war before 9/11, so they wouldn't want to share information with each other. That's gone, but somebody let something fall through the cracks here. Would you put it that way?
No, it's very little different from 9/11, because if you're an FBI agent and you have a name and you want the CIA to check it, you have to drive from downtown Washington out to Langley, sit in a meeting, explain why you want the information, and then they'll do a search on CIA computers if they're so inclined. If somebody's sick that day, or you know, somebody doesn't know what they're doing, you don't get a complete search. And we're back to the same system. Now, there are joint terrorism task forces, which should have taken care of this, but you still have the human factor, and it's so easy to fail.
20-year CIA agent Bob Baer. One more phone call. Madhani in Brooklyn. Madhani, you're on WNYC. Thank you for calling.
Oh, thank you for having me. I have a quick question for you. I mean, it seems to me, given the fact that 9/11 was 9 years ago, Osama bin Laden still being out there, not you know, being in jail or being brought to justice in any form, shows a real failure of the United States to fight terrorism.
Is bin Laden a priority in Afghanistan, and should he be, Bob Baer?
Oh, I don't think he's necessary. I mean, it's symbolically he's a priority. The fact that we can't find him, or we can't say what happened to the man, you know, we have no clue. The trail's gone frozen, as they say. Yeah, it's a failure. But this new guy, Awlaki, in Yemen, there's no indication that he's actually in touch with bin Laden. So you can have anybody seizing this mantle of jihad, and 400 or 500 people can tie us up in what probably is not an existential threat to the United States. I mean, the fact that they were only able to send one bomber on Christmas Day, the fact that they couldn't get the firing chain right on this bomb, tells me they're not very effective. And they're certainly not the kind of threat Hitler was to us in 1941.
But
in
it
Japan.
May not be an existential threat in that sense. And yet, if a few airline bombings, just a few, take place. That's still hundreds of people killed. A handful of incidents like that, or train bombings, or whatever they do manage to get through, you're going to have 1,000 or more people dead, and you're going to have pressure on the United States to completely change the nature of our open society. So it doesn't take much success on their part to really be, on a certain level, an existential threat to the United States as we think of ourselves. Or do you think that's exaggerated?
Well, it's certain that we've enjoyed a very long peace, and this kind of threat has a much larger effect than even a war does, a real war on a populace. In that case, what we need to do is, rather than deprive people of their liberties and the rest of it, we need to go to a system like the Israelis do when you get on an airplane. They have been very successful in stopping airline bombings. It wasn't because people didn't want to. It's they know who's getting on the airplane, and you just simply don't get on with any suspect luggage. And if it needs scanners, you know, if it's the difference between guarding our First Amendment rights and being scanned at an airport, I'd much rather be scanned at an airport.
Bob Baer, author of the book See No Evil, about his 20 years with the CIA. He was a subject of the movie Syriana, in which he was portrayed by George Clooney. He's a Time.com columnist now. Thank you so much for coming on again and talking about all this.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and when we continue in a minute, the noisiest places in New York City and what to do about them. Stay tuned.